Good day, patrons. It's 14 minutes to showtime. 14 minutes to showtime. Everybody, everybody, places, everyone, places. We've got Len.
Hey, you sound like Gonzo.
We've got Roger. We don't have Allison or Dave. Ah! Now I sound like Kermit.
Oh, Kermit.
Oh, that's right.
Hi, Kermit.
Oh, Kermit. So we have a problem with the last act.
That was pretty good.
Is that Gonzo? No, it's got to be Scooter is doing that stuff.
Oh, is he? Scooter's his act was always blowing up, and Scooter was like, well, this is not going to work.
He's the producer. He's the stage manager,
okay,
right?
Okay, Kermit.
Oh, Kermit.
My son today asked me, why does Miss Piggy love Kermit so much?
Because she likes frog's legs.
I guess, yeah.
They're so slender and sleek.
Like, because she really loves him. True love.
What I find interesting is there's no other,
true love.
Was from Princess Bride.
Exciting true love. Exciting and new.
Now, how many other female Muppets were there? There was what's-her-name in the band.
Yeah.
Janice.
Right.
But I can't think of anyone else besides Miss Piggy. Am I missing one?
Yes, there are others. There was a female rat.
there was that's an interesting question. There aren't any other female Muppets.
I've got a whole list if you want to hear them. Or would you rather pretend that they don't exist? Camilla the Chicken, Annie Sue Pig. That's pretty rare.
But like a major
Denise,
one, right?
Denise the Pig. That she's new. Denise, not a pig, created for the French series. Emily, aka Ma Bear, Fozzie's mother, not a regular.
That doesn't really count though.
Gladys.
Is the cow.
But that's Hilda, not the seamstress, Janice, of course, Jill the frog.
No, yeah, but there's no, I don't think there's any like Fozzie sized.
Janice is the closest so far, yeah. Other than Piggy, obviously. Mildred Huckstutter.
Can you hear us, Dave?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh,
do I
good.
Sound okay? Am I coming through the right microphone?
Yes. Can you tweak your audio just slightly, the gain higher?
Skeeter.
How's that now? How's that now?
Good.
Okay.
And then one question I had for you, was there something you wanted me to
Yolanda
plug?
The rat.
Plug? For you. Tom put it in.
He's still on.
Okay. We'll have what Tom says then.
Dave Broadbeck. Broadbeck?
Broadbeck.
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 Yeah. Broadbeck. Like there should be an A in there, but there isn't.
Hello. Allison's here now too. Yay. All right. So everybody, Allison, Dave, particularly, we are recording. Pre-show audio only at the moment.
Hi, right. Dave.
How's it going?
It's going good. Nice
do you two know each
you.
Other?
No.
Allison, meet
but
Dave.
But we do now.
Dave, meet Allison.
Hello, Allison.
When Allison met Dave.
it's a really, really lousy movie. It's...
It was an exciting moment for us all.
Yeah, really. It changed me already. I feel the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, it's podcasters across borders happening in our lives.
Exactly, Tom. Well put, sir. Well put.
No ponds today, huh? I do a show called Chit Chat Across the Pond. See?
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lake Superior's right beside
sure.
me.
Yeah,
so that's
that
close,
works.
Right?
There you go.
Are you, which city are you in, Dave?
Sault Ste. Marie.
Is that close to Windsor at all or no? Am I totally missing?
Well, depends how you define close. About 500 kilometers north.
Windsor's south of Detroit, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I grew up as a sailor. We lived in right outside of Detroit. And mm-hmm. sailed up into most of the Great Lakes. Not Lake Superior, though. A little too chill.
That's big water.
I love how you just said, I grew up as a sailor. And it just suddenly gave me the image of Allison was a young sailor on the high seas.
Yeah.
Right. For most of the early part of her life.
I was.
My first, like, you didn't have a home. You just grew up on a boat.
My first solo, I was 5 years old. We have a picture of me soloing in the dinghy with my dad in shin deep water next to me. So
soloing in the dinghy in shin deep water.
Solo dinghy.
That's a shanty. Podcast. That's the makings of a sea shanty right there.
Yeah.
It sounds like something, the kind of songs they used to sing in Newfoundland when I lived there.
That's actually the name of my autobiography, actually. So.
You guys are making fun of me, I think. I'm not sure.
Solo dinghy?
No, yes. I'm not actually making fun of you, Allison. Solo I'm dinghy. Only making fun of the things you say.
That's right. Just the things that you think and say.
No, and it's not even that you're saying them. They're just striking me funny today.
This is funny.
I should look at my power supply for this computer.
My wrestling name, actually.
It was just that image of you, like, not having a house and being a young girl on a boat, as dressed in a sailor's outfit. That just made me laugh.
I'm going to send you a picture of me in the dinghy.
Oh, I want to see it. Oh, so to the mechanics of the show, we have 3 minutes each on the first couple top stories. And then we're going to move through the other ones a little quicker, 2 minutes each. When we get to the main topic, I'll read the little intro and kind of hand it over to you, Allison, to talk about how you thought of this topic.
Okay.
And then you can sort of finish your setup with maybe a question for Dave or something.
Okay, that sounds good. So you will have already mentioned Veronica, or that's where I start jumping in?
Veronica?
I'm
going to read. Yes, I see what you're saying. I'm going to read that whole little bit on 25, and I'll finish with Allison. That reminded you of a couple things, and then
okay, and then I can go into the hardest to think like a scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an engineer, not a scientist. That's why we needed Dave.
That's very kind.
I have my uses here, but Tom said we weren't smart enough to do it without you. So
those are my exact words. Yeah. We're not smart enough, Allison. And then in the doc, Dave, particularly Allison, I know you've seen this before. The top section will turn yellow when it's time to move on, and it'll turn red when it's past time to move on, and we should shut up and move on.
Right.
Shut up.
And of course, Len's going to be illustrating the whole time.
And then there's the electric shock is right after that.
Yeah, I think Roger's working on that next.
That's right.
Wait, shock?
To get us to move
on. I got some equipment I could actually.
Oh, yeah?
BF Skinner, baby.
I was
going
to say, is it BF Skinner type stuff?
Oh, yeah. 28 volts DC, buddy.
I am not a chicken.
Okay, I am a chicken then.
Yes, that's the end of the experiment. I am a chicken.
That's right. Yeah. It's kind of anticlimactic, but.
See, now that whole kind of sea thing is in my head.
My favorite part, to your point, Allison. My favorite part of this five reasons why it's so hard to think about a scientist is we aren't as smart as we think we are. We're overconfident.
What is that, the Dunning-Kruger effect or something?
Is that what it's called?
Not quite.
You have to be completely unself-aware if you read that and don't go, oh, wait, that does sound like me.
Right. It's like the person who's like, well, I'm sure people are.
I'm a PhD in psychology. I must know some neurochemistry. Like, obviously, that happens to people.
I'm an exempt from this.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I deal with numbers. I can figure this out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and on TV, this the stereotype's always like that, right? You know, it's like, you don't have an MD, but you do biology. What disease do you think this guy has? So, most of my biologist friends would look at you and go, I work with plants.
Something that hurts, apparently.
I'd say it's scabie.
It's probably, yeah, almost certainly.
Or maybe smut.
Yeah, or, dum-dum fever.
Dum-dum.
Well, sometimes it makes sense, though, because sometimes people confuse a psychologist with a psychiatrist.
Some people do, yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. And then also people think that I know how to do therapy because
I
know anything about that. But I'm
because you do, you're a masseuse? What?
Yes. Yeah, well, don't let that out, but that in my spare time.
But I've been relying on you to cure my frozen shoulder. All right, shall we go live?
I didn't find the picture I was looking for, but I did find the... We're going recording, live now. But not
we've
live.
Only been recording audio. We're going to go.
All right, now, video now is live audio. Streaming. We're live. Don't video. Pick your nose, or you can, but it'll be there for everyone to see.
Just be aware. Picking your nose will not be seen.
I put a sailing photo of me from when I'm a little tiny girl, but it's not the photo I wanted.
Where'd you put it?
In the IRC.
Nice.
Oh, I see it. The IRC.
Wait.
Is that you? The little head on the right?
Oh, you freaked me out there. You said IRC. My parents' fake sailing club was called the IRCs, the E-R-K-K, the Eagle Rock Cruising Club.
That's so cute.
Good.
Look at that.
I live near Eagle Rock, but there's just a mall.
Aw.
You're on the water.
You look really enjoying it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Sean's a child of color photo.
Yeah.
Was it color?
Look at you escaping into Canada.
Exactly.
Escaping or running away from?
Or running away from. Yeah, I can't tell.
Could be.
Are you in Windsor or not?
Yeah.
A Windsor knot.
Perhaps we ran right out of the country. Yeah.
I used to do that for my ties, but it takes too long.
I do a four in hand now. I'm lazy.
Hey, can I do two plugs? I just thought of a second one. One is plugging you and me talking.
Mm-hmm.
But I just finished a video for Don McAllister screencast online. It might be cool. Whoops.
Yeah.
What's the URL?
I will put that in.
Right just try to keep them in the space of a single plug for time's sake as much as you can. But I don't mind you plugging more than one thing. It's great.
Hey, put these in.
You're all good on which ones you're reading, Allison.
I'm sure I get to say meow meow.
No, I didn't give that one to you. Do you want that one? I thought you didn't want it.
No, I did. I thought that'd be helpful.
Wait, Roger,
you just moved everything all over the place. What did you do?
I didn't do anything. I just deleted a space.
No, you deleted where I talked about Tom.
I did not.
Now my two things aren't lined up there.
Hold on.
I can rewrite that title. I think we were doing it at the same time. That's why.
Yeah, you probably overwrote each other.
Yeah. So
I did not delete it because I can't undo it. I undid the space.
Okay.
But I didn't.
Then just hold still. Don't do anything.
I'm not doing anything.
Don't do nothing.
Do nothing.
Boo, boo, boo. Do, do, do.
All right. I'm about ready. You guys about ready?
I was ready.
All right. So, Dave, just so you know, you'll see the top of. Do you have the rundown in front of you?
I do.
You'll see the top change color.
Yeah.
And that's,
we just had that conversation, didn't we?
Okay. Yeah. Don't worry. Tom told me.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was like that last time I was on, too, I think.
Okay, cool.
I
may be misremembering. I'm not that bright.
I've implanted memories in you.
See, that's a whole different conversation. Yeah.
Well, that's where we got to have Dr. Gary on.
There we go.
She specializes in debunking the whole concept of memory. Oh, all memories.
Have I met her? I don't remember. All right, here we go. 3, 2.
Do you like listening to advertisements? Me neither. Want to help and support creators directly? Then head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support and help us reach our new milestone today.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, February 16th, 2018, from DTNS headquarters in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
From my Cleveland art cave, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm Allison Sheridan from South Bay Podfeed Productions.
That's right, Sarah Lane off today, but we've got a grand crew. That's a beer, isn't it? We have a wonderful crew. That has not been drinking Grand Cru, as far as I know. Also joining us, Dave the Psychologist, Dave Broadbeck of DaveBroadbeck.com is all I have down.
That's, That's fine. You can find other stuff there, so that's great.
Yeah, does a bunch of good podcasts, and of course teaches at the university. And we are going to be talking today a little bit about why it's so hard to think like a scientist, and why anecdotal evidence sometimes just can't help but weigh it more than it's worth. That is all coming up. Our producer Roger Chang here as well.
Hello,
Roger. Let's start with a few tech things you should know. Sources tell CNBC that Uber is considering selling its Southeast Asian ride-hailing business to Grab. Grab Taxi was one of their early brands. They do ride-hailing as well. The deal would leave Uber with a stake in Grab. No deal has yet been reached, though.
Intel told shareholders Friday that it faces 32 class action lawsuits over the Spectre and Meltdown vulnerabilities. 30 of the suits claim customers were harmed by Intel's action and/or omissions. The other two accuse Intel of making misleading statements in violation of securities laws.
Qtech and Intel have teamed up on an experimental 2-qubit, which is kind of low these days, 2-qubit quantum computer, but it runs on a silicon chip. Usually quantum computers need superconductive material and near-perfect zero temperatures to operate. This new chip uses quantum dot-based spin qubits and can be made with existing manufacturing infrastructure, which if you can get that to do more qubits would be a big deal.
I was always telling them they should use the dot-based spin qubits.
Yeah.
It's really the way they...
Been hammering away to those quantum scientists for years about that. And they both listened and didn't listen.
Oh, man. Nice pull.
Thanks.
That's pretty strong.
Let's talk a little more about Google angering the internet. What did they do, Allison?
So Google has removed the view image button from its image search as part of an agreement with Getty Images. The button previously opened the image on its own in the browser. Now users only get a visit button, which shows the image in context on the page it's from, where users will then need to right-click and open the image in a new tab to view it separately. This is going to drive me nuts. I use this all the time. Anyway, Google announced a licensing agreement with Getty Images last week, and this change was one of that agreement's provisions.
Lasai. So what they've done is they've made it harder for people to view the image, which they think, at least Getty Images must think, will make it less likely that folks will copy images from the internet, which is silly. If you really want to copy an image from the internet, you can just take a screenshot. It's not really stopping anything. It's a speed bump that's going to annoy people. Getty already watermarks their stuff. And sometimes, and I don't know if Getty actually does this or not, but sometimes sites will disable right-clicking, which I suppose you could just have Google respect that and not do the view image if that happens. But really, this is just a thing that's going to inconvenience people who aren't breaking the rules.
Just slow us down a little bit, right?
Yeah. It seems like this might bother me more than others.
Well, it bothers me. I use it all the time. And usually what I'm doing is I'm looking for a company's logo. So I'm flipping through them real quick till I find the official one. And then I hit it. It pops open big. I right click and grab it.
And even if I want to link directly to that server's image, which sometimes is a bad idea because you don't want to steal bandwidth. Sometimes you do want to copy it and host it yourself if that's allowed to copy it. Other times you're like, no, I want to make sure people know where it came from, that it came directly from the company. It's a real thing that they serve. It makes it harder to even get that link.
Yeah, well.
Friday, U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller indicted Russia's Internet Research Agency and charged 13 Russians with conspiracy to defraud the United States. Of course, particularly the organization impersonated U.S. citizens and used botnets to attempt to influence the U.S. presidential election. A lot of technical details in here, which is why we're covering it on this show. We don't really care so much about the political aspects of this, but Internet Research Agency used a VPN that they set up on servers in the United States to operate the social media accounts that appeared to come from the U.S. So they had to come here and do a little work to get the servers set up, although I guess they could have done a lot of that work remotely, and then were able to operate them from Russia. The defendants are also accused of using fake bank accounts and false ID documents. Deputy Attorney General for the United States, Rod Rosenstein, said there was no allegation that the operation altered the outcome of the election. This is just an attempted fraud, but very pervasive. And I have to say, from my perspective, very interesting to see the lengths they went to basically troll people.
It's also interesting to me that they were successful at at trolling, like you say, but they use the VPN to operate these social media accounts, and yet the FBI was able to figure out who they were, where they came from, and the organization, and trace them back down anyway.
It took a lot of work, right? It wasn't something they could just, you know, do in a day. This has been months and months of investigation, more almost a year now, yeah.
I actually, unless I misinterpreted it on the news today, I actually heard that it started more than a year ago, was like 2 years ago that they actually started this, and then they were seeing this activity prior to actually trying to influence this election. They were already watching that activity. So yeah, it's fascinating how much technology went into figuring this out.
And probably some footwork too, right? I mean, just the idea that
a little bit.
That, you know, they probably didn't crack the VPN. They probably figured out what servers were used and then maybe subpoenaed those and were able to examine those, or found out through interviews with people, oh, we were using a VPN, or they were using a VPN. It's an incredible combination of social engineering and technical engineering for very little effect, it seems.
Now, I've got my prediction of what the internet's going to do. They're going to try to find out which VPN service provider it was and then complain about them.
I think they set up their own VPN. I don't think they actually went through a third party, or else they would have gotten caught a lot faster, I bet.
There's that. All right. Well, the Wall Street Journal reports Google tested a new emergency cell phone calling system in the United States in a few states in December and January. Using the U.S. 911 system, Google sent location data from Android to the 911 operators. RapidOS is a company involved in the test, told Wall Street Journal that more than 80% of the calls using the new system were more accurate than location data usually provided by the wireless carriers. Google hopes to implement the system across the U.S. this year.
This is great. Anything that makes things more accurate in emergency situations is fantastic. Sounds like they're doing a good job of testing this out to make sure that it works better before they roll out to everybody. My only hope is that they expand this beyond just Android devices.
I'm real curious to see how this will work with the requirement to share your location with different services. So let's say I'm reporting some crime that I'm watching, but I don't want to be involved. I just want to report it and run away. Maybe I don't want to give my location. I'm having a heart attack. Yeah, I would really like you to know my location. Are those going to be things that they have to separate in some way? Is, you know, Apple in particular going to make you have to say yes to share your location?
Well, yeah. And one would not want to have to do that if you're having a heart attack. So there should be an easy way for someone calling 911 to say, if I'm calling 911, go ahead and share my data. But like you said, if you're calling to just report an incident, maybe you don't want your data shared. And granted, you can say, well, you should not worry about that if you're reporting an incident, but it could be a chilling effect on incidents in that case.
Sure. Yeah. I also want to know what the other 20% were. Was it less accurate in the other 20% or just not more accurate?
Yeah. I'm curious about that too. And obviously Hopefully. What they're trying to do is just show like, this is going to help. It's supplemental. I don't think it replaces the other system.
Yeah.
Dave, what do you think of this?
I think it's cool that the idea of the location-based stuff, I mean, it's really important, obviously, when you're doing the 911 call. It's funny, it would never occur to me if I was making a 911 call, I don't think, for them not to want to know my location. But then again, you know, I live in a town of 75,000 people, and there's not a whole lot of things that are really horribly scary here, probably. So maybe I just have that experience. But, you know, so I can see that angle. I wonder how many people would be reticent. I guess that's the question. And that's probably an empirical question. You could probably answer that with some experiments, you know, or a survey. Just ask some people, would you not want your location shared when you make a 911 call? People would probably be pretty honest about that, Tim.
And honestly, the carriers already can track you if you're making a 911 call. That's just built in. This was a system created in order to get over the problem of everyone starting to have cell phones and not being able to say where they were. So the carriers can find you. That is an important thing. And I'll be honest, you want that. Granted, like I just said, it might have a chilling effect on reporting crimes, but you want them to be able to find you if they can.
Yes.
An Australian transit agency deactivated the transit pass of Meow Ludo Disco Gamma Meow Meow which is his name, while he was traveling to the United States to speak at a cyborg convention. Meow Meow had embedded the transit pass chip in his hand in April 2017. Now, when he did this, the New South Wales Transport Authorities disabled his pass, but he fooled them because the pass he put in his hand wasn't under his name. So they weren't able to figure out who he was until he left, and they noticed the pass stopped being used, and they're like, ha-ha, we've got him. Or at least that's what I think happened.
That's not a pass. This is a pass.
Yeah. And yeah. So they did. They invalidated it. They've also fined him $200 for riding a train without a valid ticket. I'm assuming that what they're objecting to is carving up the card, right? And putting the and implanting the chip without being in the card. There's probably some very strict rules about the card has to be whole to prevent fraud. So you can't cut up the card and do anything with it, including putting it in your hand.
Beyond just being able to talk about a story about a guy named Meow Meow, he really enjoyed the fact that his card was deactivated after this convention he happened to be at in the United States. It was a cyborg convention, and the subject was regulation and cyborg rights. So does a cyborg have a right to ride the subway?
Right. the irony is not lost, right? He just spent a few days talking about this very type of situation. And I'm sure what the New South Wales people are saying, the transport agency people are saying is, look, we don't care if you're a cyborg or not. You can't cut up your card. We don't allow that.
All right. Well, I love this next story. In February 2011, NASA sent Robonaut 2 to the International Space Station to be tested as a robotic assistant in repetitive tasks like cleaning or flipping switches. The robot was only a torso and arms, but it worked well until 2014 when NASA upgraded it with legs to give it more mobility. They're legs that grab onto things, not real like feet and legs. The upgrade did not go well, and the last time it reported completing a research task was December 2013. The problem appears to be a lack of a ground path, which is difficult to fix on board, and even if fixed, probably has caused components to degrade or burn out. This week, NASA announced Robonaut 2 will be returned to Earth for repairs. If it can't be repaired, it will be swapped for a newer model. Now, what I found really interesting, this is a great article. I read every word of this one. I loved it. So this was a Model B, and the ones they have on the ground were the Model C, and the Model C had this ground wire, this ground path correctly done. So they've spent years swapping out parts and swapping out cables and swapping cards and trying to figure out what was wrong with this thing. And it was intermittent because the ground being messed up was causing components to fail that weren't necessarily the root cause. So, that's kind of like Science 101. You don't have a good control, right? They don't have the same thing in both places.
Did they not see Apollo 13? You have to have the exact same stuff on the ground.
Yeah.
Evidently not. But the idea of the robot with legs crawling around, flying around was great. But why did they make him so big, too? He's huge.
He's human size, yeah.
No.
The scary aliens. I mean, that's pretty obvious.
He's Russian. Oh,
of course, Dave. I didn't think of that.
It's for defense. Yeah. Well, and the best part about this is if they had been able to get the spindly leg-like things, like you said, they're not really legs. if they'd been able to get those to work, the next step was to do EVAs with it. So it could go
IVAs first. IVAs first, intravehicular activity.
That's what the spindly legs were for. Right. They could never get working, so they couldn't move past IVA tests to get to EVA. Here's the thing. I love this idea that they were troubleshooting from Earth, from the surface of the Earth, to a space station. That must have been incredibly complex. Why wouldn't they just send up a newer version of the robot? Maybe you want to learn something by fixing the old one, but
it's a problem of cargo space. The problem was that the robot himself is very heavy. It's a big payload. So they even had to wait. The reason he's been dormant for so long is they can't even get him back down because they didn't have cargo space.
True. Okay. But if you're going to send a new one up, either way, it's going to be cargo space. You might as well send the ones you know works.
that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like it.
And that was the other part of this article I liked is how, and Dave, I'm curious what you think of this. They said, look, as much of a failure as this has been practically, we learned a lot. So it's not a failure as an experiment.
Yeah, it reminds me, in fact, you mentioned Apollo 13. And one of the things that when I teach intra-psych, when I talk about problem solving, is that and sort of novel problem solving approaches is when you have all this stuff in front of you and you're trying to solve a problem, a lot of times it takes somebody coming in, and I'm not going to say outside the box because it's a cliche, but that's what I mean, that has a different approach to things. And like I said, you look at the Apollo 13 example, it's beautiful. And it's the same sort of thing here where they're probably going to learn something about their procedures for problem solving even. Even though NASA's been doing this for, since before probably any of us were born.
Yeah, right.
Nonetheless, they can always learn something new about problem solving. And problem solving is something that is kind of a fuzzy thing to study. Like it's not easy. So especially doing it in a real world situation where there actually are consequences rather than just experimental things. I think something really great can come of it for NASA, even if they can't fix the thing at all.
Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines, available on the Amazon Echo, the Google Home, in the Anchor app, and as a podcast at dailytechheadlines.com. So Monday, we talked about how Veronica was hesitant to upgrade to macOS High Sierra because someone close to her had some major problems with it. And I noted that I'd upgraded twice, two different machines, hadn't had any issue, but that I understood because it's harder to feel comfortable about things when you're close to that anecdotal evidence that tells you otherwise. And Allison, that reminded you of a couple things you've seen recently.
Yeah, there was an article for the British Psychological Society written by Christian Jarrett, where they summarized some work done by Pretty Shaw at the University of Michigan on why it's hard to think like a scientist. So the summary article by Christian Jarrett talks about five reasons it's so hard to think like a scientist. And the number one thing is that we're swayed by anecdotes. Mm-hmm. And that got me to thinking about how my single favorite thing on the internet is when someone says, well, I'm having this problem and I looked on the internet and a whole bunch of other people are too. Sure. Yes. That's great. And I was also thinking about, Tom, when you were on the Phileas Club one time, Wendy, you asked Wendy, how do you convince somebody to change their position on something? And she said, you can't. First of all, but the example she gave was if you're trying to convince somebody to get vaccinated, for example, if you can introduce them to someone with polio, they will then believe in vaccines. But short of doing that, it's almost impossible to get someone to change a position like that. Right. So that article combined with what you, that conversation you'd had, really came to light when Stephen Sanofsky, who used to run a lot of the largest projects at Microsoft, Windows itself, he's got a lot of experience with scaling large software development projects. And he did a tweet storm where he talked about Apple and how everybody's talking about their software quality's gone downhill. And part of what he said was, I'm betting that it isn't. That if we could actually see the data that they have, I'm betting that it actually shows that the quality has gone dramatically up, you know, on a percentage basis and things like that. But he said you need to step back and look at the broader context of what they've accomplished and the scale that they've gone to. So it got back to that anecdote thing where hey, I had a bug in iOS 11. This thing's happening to me. Therefore, this whole thing is garbage. So yes. Dave, we wanted to get you on because as a psychologist, do you have experience learning about this, you know, what is it about anecdotes that make us go, that's the truth, and all this other scientific evidence is not?
Well, one of the things that we have these sort of heuristics that we use to solve problems, okay? They typically work really, really well. So the idea of anecdotes fits in with something called the availability heuristic. So something that is, if it's available to memory, it must be important. That's a sort of a shortcut that we've learned over, I wouldn't say learned, that we've evolved over 200,000 years of being people. And it usually works. It actually usually gives a pretty good example, pretty good solution. The problem, of course, is that we didn't evolve with there being the possibility of, of there being 3.5-4 billion people online that you can talk to at any given time.
So it was before we had a lot of data to work with. You might as well work with the only data you have.
Exactly. And what you had in front of you probably made sense. I mean, this is true of all kinds of things about problem solving. So it's the same thing with the gambler's fallacy, for example, where people don't understand how probability works because they don't understand independent events. But you know what? There aren't any independent events in nature. So we evolved in a place where everything was dependent on everything else. But people, you know, Lothar of the Hill People, which is a reference that maybe nobody got, wasn't out rolling dice. So thank you, Tom. Wasn't rolling dice. He was, or flipping a coin. He was hoping that the saber-toothed tiger that he saw there yesterday, if it's that or at that watering hole, you avoid that watering hole. So you know you pass those genes on. So this is what's happened over the, like, and these heuristics work really, really well. But the problem is, we now have, like you said, we now have so much data in front of us that they can lead us astray, and they could lead us astray before, you know, most people were online too. This is work by Tversky et al. Over the years, looked at these kind of heuristics, and they can make you make a lot of mistakes in certain situations. And one of them is, like I said, why do you think advertising works? Because, you know, why, when you walk by the deodorant aisle, you go, da, 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 you pick up the menin, right? So it's that kind of thing. And again, we didn't evolve in a time where Don Draper was writing ads. Sorry, I'm always watching Mad Men.
There's not yet. Not most of us. No, a very small amount of evolution happened for people who grew up in that time. I think the other thing that was interesting about this British Psychology Society story that Allison brought was mentioning a study published last year where Fernando Rodriguez and colleagues asked dozens of students to evaluate scientific news reports that drew inappropriate conclusions from weak evidence. So these were designed to be wrong. Some of the reports, however, opened with an anecdote supporting that inappropriate conclusions, and others didn't, as a control. Regardless of the level of university training or knowledge of scientific concepts, the students were less competent at critically evaluating the reports that opened with the anecdote. So if you're like, well, I'm smarter than that, I'll always see past the anecdote. It's hardwired, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really is. And I mean, this is the problem, is that we can take advantage of this problem and these heuristics and make these really dumb judgments, and we all do it. One of the real problems that just shows up, I know with my students, when they're writing like their thesis or something like that, a lot of times they're getting a presentation, they want to start out with an anecdote, and I would say, please don't. Instead, just get to how you did it and why it worked and everything like that, because, you know, it's a real issue, and you know, it happens. The other thing that happens, of course, is you get so married to your own ideas that even as a good scientist, and I like to think I'm pretty decent, but I mean, when I was in grad school, I remember giving my master's thesis, my master's proposal to our lab group, and it was awful. Like, I almost quit school that day. I went and drank 3 pitchers of beer, which was like one more than normal for me. as a graduate student. And the next day, for a Tuesday. It was a Tuesday. How did you know that? And I went and I talked to my advisor the next day, and she said, it wasn't just your fault. I'm your advisor. And I mean, she's famous and such. And, you know, you get so close to things, you make mistakes. You think, I'm smart. I must know what I'm doing. I've got all this training. And you make mistakes. We all do. That's why peer review is important, right?
Right.
Let's turn this around, though. And in your line of work, where I assume you're training people to become professors and work in this field, but what if you were training a group of people in business? I'm thinking we look at these 5 things that they suggest that makes it hard to work, act like a scientist. We use this to manipulate people to do what we want in business. Okay. So I want someone to give me more budget. I'm just going to put, number 3 was we're seduced by graphs, formulas, and meaningless neuroscience. I'm just going to put a bunch of that glop into my proposal, and they're going to go, whoa, that must be really true. Throw a little anecdote in, like, hey, you guys remember last year when you didn't give me budget and this crazy thing happened? That's what I should do. So I'm just going to use this.
And what you want to be doing is, and you'd say something like, and as you can see here from this fMRI, we want to increase the amount of dopamine people get. People just go crazy over stuff like that. And I mean, quote, neural marketing, which is a complete scam. These kind of things. Yeah. So it's
to learn to use it.
You could use it for evil.
Okay. Yeah, so you mentioned in academics, you have peer review. There's the idea of transparency and open publishing and showing your sources. And that kind of helps guard against this happening, because you have so many different eyes on it. But what can I, what can I do? Because we have people in the chat room saying, I'm pretty sure I'm not susceptible to this. You are. You absolutely are.
Yes, they are.
But if we know it's hardwired into us, how do we combat against it?
I think the knowledge of it is the first thing. So if you know,
acknowledge you have a problem.
Because you have a problem because you're a human being. Okay. That we're hooked up this way. And if we know that we're hooked up that way, then we can say to our, and these processes, these heuristics are unconscious. They're not available to consciousness, but what is available to consciousness is saying, I will not fall for this. Right. So it's like what Richard Dawkins said in The Selfish Gene, where he said, I know I'm hardwired to be selfish, but I choose not to be that way today. Mm-hmm. And that's an important point you can make when you have knowledge of these things. But we should be teaching these things to kids in grades 6, grade 7. That actually their thinking works like this.
That's an important point. Don't say you're not susceptible to it. Admit yeah. you are, and then it. Look yes. for it happening and try to yes. resist it when it does. Yeah,
I think the yes, hardest exactly. one in the list was the fifth one said being smart isn't enough. And it yeah. was actually a case of they said that if you're really smart in a topic, you think you're not susceptible and you're still going to have the problem. You think that you know more than you do. Right. That combined with the overconfidence one, that was number two, was you get confident yeah. because you think you're really smart. And you might be really smart. You might be as smart as Dave. And yet that's actually going to hurt you in doing this, in reading things, because you're going to think, I understand more than I think I do. No, I understand less than
curse.
I think I do.
It's my gift.
Yeah. This is a very important skill to keep in mind when you're on Reddit. Thanks to everyone who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Real quickly, out of our mailbag, Mohan wrote regarding our suggestion to use Privacy Badger. He says, it does a great job, but I just use tracking protection built into Firefox 58 Quantum, which can be used not just in private mode, but also in regular mode. This does the job for me, and from what I've read, it's borrowed from the Tor browser. And yeah, it's not going to help you Chrome users out there, but if you are willing to use Firefox or you already use Firefox, you got that built in. Stop people from tracking.
Safari right also blocks third-party ad trackers now.
Nice.
Mac people.
Yeah. All right, let's check in with Len Peralta, who has been busily drawing a visual anecdote for us.
Yes, I kind of took this in a different direction. This is the first time I've ever drawn a four-panel cartoon DTNS, which is sort of a big deal. Mm. But let me take you through it. The first panel, of course, is a gentleman talking to a young woman about the HomePod, which we all know, of course, leaves an indelible white ring on your wood tables, as we find out this year. So he's telling her a story about that and saying, don't pick up your HomePod if you want to find an indelible white ring on your wood table. Next panel, she looks, decides to pick it up. And the final panel, there's a tombstone that says, I didn't listen to my friend and now I'm dead.
The ring. Oh, it was the ring.
You know what else I love about this is that's what Apple actually should have said was just don't pick it up if you don't want to
see that's right. That's what Steve Jobs would have said, right?
That's what he said. Just don't pick it up. It's a feature.
I love this. This is so good. So yes, anyone who is in any way thinking it's dumb or horrible or whatever about the HomePod leaving white rings on oil or wax treated wooden surfaces, you should buy this. This poster, right. I'm just telling you.
Just because
I can show you some neuroscience that says that it's a great idea.
It's good advice too. Just listen. Don't listen to your friends and you don't die.
Just leave it there. Just leave it right
That's
there.
That's fair.
Just don't pick it up, please.
LenPeraltaStore.com, of course, the place to find that. Dave Broadbeck, thank you so much for joining us as well and sharing your expertise with us. Where can people find more of what you do?
You can find me on Twitter at @DBroadbeck. You can find other podcasts I do, like Best Episode Ever at bestepisodeever.com, which is a retro TV podcast. You can find one I do with my wife that I just released one today, where we go grocery shopping and talk about things at broken-area.com. And you can look, let's say you're interested in psychology. Go to people.auc.ca/Broadbeck/blog, which makes me sound like Dvorak 10 years ago. And you can find all my lectures, literally 1,100 so far, a little more than that, actually, of my lectures over the last 11 years are there as podcasts.
Go check it out. Most of that stuff is linked from davebroadbeck.com as well.
Yep, sure.
Thank you, Allison Sheridan. It's good to have you on the show. What do you got going on?
Well, probably the coolest thing I did recently was a video tutorial for Screencast Online. It's on the app Focos, which is a really wicked cool app for iPhones that can take portrait mode photos, allows you to change the focus of it. It's very cool. You can watch a preview at Screencast Online or get a free 14-day trial of his site, and you can, it's Don McAllister's site, and you can watch it there. I'm really proud of that. The one that was really cool. And I'm going to sneak in a second one because it sort of plugs Tom. I had Tom on Chit Chat Across the Pond just a couple of weeks ago, episode number 520. We talk about how social media makes us feel.
Ooh.
We really talked about our feelings.
How do you feel about food pictures, Tom?
Nothing.
I don't
more
like
than
them, really. But I get it. Go check it out. Podfeet.com Patreon.com. Thanks to everybody who supports this show directly. We are halfway through the month, so we need your support. If you're already supporting us, thank you. Please continue as much as you can. We see people dropping off, and these days it's always because they just have some financial hardship, and we totally understand that. But we know there's some of you out there that don't, and it only takes a minute to go to patreon.com/DTNS. Give us a dollar a month. That's all it takes. And you've picked up somebody else who was feeling bad and made their day better. So check it out, patreon.com/DTNS. And don't forget all the fine new wares, t-shirts, coffee mugs, hoodies, at dailytechnewsshow.com/store. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 2130 UTC. And you can find out how to watch us at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. No show Monday for the President's Day holiday here in the U.S., but we're back Tuesday with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was a great show. Thank you, guys.
That was fun. Really thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I would love to have you meet my friend, Dr. Marianne Gary, the one I was talking about. She works at university out of in New Zealand. I forget the name of it. She just moved universities. But she works on basically debunking memories and does all this crazy research where she'll take grad students, you know, because that's who you experiment on, and and basically implant false memories.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah, sure.
Crazy what she can do. It's really slick. Yeah. Her advisor was Professor Loftus out of UC Irvine. Oh,
Elizabeth, yeah, sure. Elizabeth, sure.
So you know her? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So you probably run in the same circles.
Sort of. I do more animal memory stuff than human memory stuff, but I certainly know that stuff. And that there's a great Loftus experiment, right? Where you ever heard about the Lost in the Mall experiment?
Yeah, Marianne worked on that.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay, so there you go. Yeah, I love that stuff.
It's just horrible what she does. She introduces terrible memories for people. She convinces them that they were lost in the mall as a small child.
Oh yeah, and you have to talk to their parents first because you have to find out if they ever were lost in the mall, right?
Yeah. She has to go to the ethics office a lot.
Yeah. Hey, I'm on our ethics panel here. I just reviewed a.
So wait, even if you weren't lost, huh? I wonder how that would work.
Yeah, see, Roger, the way this works is I say to you, I've talked to your mom and dad to get some background information on you. And they talked about a time when you were 4 years old and you got lost in the mall. And you would usually look and go, I don't think so. I don't remember that. And they say, yeah, there's all kinds of details. So what happens is it was here and here and here. And then you wait here. And then
you're wearing
happened,
the purple shirt and then that you actually did own.
Yeah.
She throws in real facts.
Yeah, and then you come back like a week later, and then they say, okay, can you tell me about the time you got lost in the mall? Now, a lot of participants will say that I'm sure that didn't happen, or I have no memory of it, but a good chunk of people will come out and say, okay, so what happened was I was wearing the purple shirt, and then I was walking with my mom and dad, and I looked over, I went over to the toy store, and then they were gone, and like exactly the story that she's told, and they'll even put in other events, they'll embellish. Right?
That actually happened to me. Like, I went to the toy store, my parents like left without me.
They've got all kinds of other ones. They'll get you to tell a story about how you were on a lake in in a canoe. Yeah. I mean, it's not always the mall.
My dad would never be anywhere near a canoe. It's not like his thing.
They get about a 20% success rate where people will recite a full detailed story about it.
Isn't that what we call gaslighting someone?
Well, the point is that you can manipulate. They work with how leading questions are done by police officers in a lineup, for example. You know, you can basically make people remember that was the guy that attacked you when that guy was never there.
Yeah, and a buddy of mine's a forensic psychologist and does that kind of stuff.
Gaslighting, it borrows a lot of that methodology, what people call gaslighting.
Because I used to do that in high school with my friend, like say for like Monday was a day off because it was called Teacher's Day is a day that all the teachers would
like
basically
teachers
meet for
in
all.
Service. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I remember on a Tuesday I would turn around my friends like, where were you yesterday? It's like, what are you talking about? It was Teacher's Day. And I was like, no,
actually gonna hurt
next
you.
Week. Like,
thanks to everybody who supports
so funny,
this show
didn't believe
directly.
Me, and then
we
I
are
got my,
halfway
the
through
guy
the
next
month,
to me so... on it. And my friend's face turned like just blank white, like just like, oh crap.
That's outstanding.
It's called.
You're a horrible person, but I like it.
It is true.
I applaud this.
So titles in my anecdotal opinion, ellipses. Are you as smart as Dave? Meow meow Dallas multipass.
Anything with meow in it's pretty good as far as I'm concerned.
Gotta have some meow meow.
Yeah,
I like this one. Meow meow plays cat and mouse with South Wales. Oh, it should be New South Wales or South Wales. Is it South Wales Transit? South Wales?
New South Wales.
Australia. New South Wales Transit. That's the try turning it on and off again. The antidote.
I like that one. That's the one I've been working with.
Yeah, that is anecdote. That's nice. Okay. I like that. Yeah.
The anecdotal antidote. You can also use it to warm up your mouth before a speaking engagement.
The anecdotal antidote.
Rubber baby buggy anecdote. Bumpers. Anecdotal.
Which one did you say you liked? I finally got into it.
The anecdotal antidote.
Linoleum.
It's like saying the bank robber had linoleum. Ugly shaped feet.
The anecdotal antidote.
The human torch came in for a bank loan.
That's a what?
That's a Ron Burgundy. Like right before.
Is that from Anchorman? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it sounded vaguely familiar, but I couldn't place it.
The human torch came in for applied for a bank loan. It's just like they're like useless.
The human torch.
I have to say that was it what's the one where he hears the voice? Crap. Like there's only three Will Ferrell movies I like, and one of them is Anchorman, the other one is Semi-Pro, and the other is Stranger Than Fiction.
I think that actually, as a rule, yeah, I think that's true. Semi-Pro is great. It's not great, but it's funny, and I love things about anything about Rebel leagues. I love the ABA and the WHA and the USFL. I love that crap.
I love the fact that it was both a send up but also an homage to that, like, you know,
yeah,
particular, you know, sports level. It's just funny. Like, oh, we're gonna wear makeup.
Yeah.
They all start sweating and gets in their eyes. I don't know why. It's just stupid, but it's funny.
Well, I used to love, like, stuff. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
There was one thing I wanted to tell you. When you were, when we were talking and you mentioned heuristics and you said the availability heuristics, Dr. Gary is always making me read books about, you know, brains and stuff. She makes me do that. And she gave me this one book to read. And all through it, they kept using the word heuristics. And they talked about the availability heuristics. And for the life of me, I've never been able to get a definition of heuristics that I can understand.
Okay.
What the hell's a heuristic?
Heuristic is a set of rules or a rule that allows you to solve a problem to quickly get to a solution.
Like adding goes like this, or
it's like a shortcut.
It's a shortcut. Tom's got it. That's a very good way to put it. It's a shortcut, and it usually works. Whereas this heuristic and an algorithm always works. So, for example, if I was cracking your password. A heuristic might be, and I'm sure this wouldn't work, but, you know, 20 years ago it would have worked. You know, if I knew a little bit about you and I knew your birthday, I might try those kind of things.
Okay, whereas so that would be a heuristic.
An algorithm, a dictionary attack will work. Yes. Whereas a dictionary attack is an algorithm, it will work, but not a dictionary attack, but like, you know, all the possible combinations of letters and numbers.
Brute force attack. Yeah.
Brute force. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
Yeah. Like heuristics just kind of makes assumptions that you establish.
Yes. Yeah, it may, and these things, and like I said, they're not available to consciousness. We don't know we're doing these things. The evidence comes out in experiments, right? So we know that people use these heuristics. So there's other ones too, like anchoring. So if I say to you, there's a great experiment done in the 1970s. Like, I think it's Tversky's group, and they asked these students, undergraduates, do you think the number of countries in Africa that are in the UN is 65% or higher? Is it 75% or higher? But it's a different group. 65, 75, 85, 95, 45, 35. And then you take a look at what number people say. The best predictor of what number people say, actually the number that you anchored with. So if you say 65, and then 75 is going to be higher, 85 it's higher. So We do those things all the time.
All of them. I would pick all of them.
Well, yeah, that's it's because you know a few things. Oh. You're not a first year undergraduate.
Bringing in pre-existing knowledge to the experiment. You're ruining it.
Oh.
That's right.
Invalid. Dispose of him as you would any other refuse.
we just put people like you down when you come into the lab. It's
no smart asses. Get out of here.
Oh man, if there were no smart asses, everybody had a PhD, buddy.
Just from the little I know Dave, I'm not sure he would have made the cut on that.
No, I was. I'm very smart assed. I'm known for that. My mom has told me my superpower is the ability to just say anything and people go, "Oh, that's just Dave." Whereas other people get fired for things. Yeah. Apparently, my father could do too. So.
See, I specialize more in sarcasm. Somebody put a poster on my door at work that said the National Sarcasm Society, and underneath it said, "Like, we need your support."
I like that. I like that. That is pretty great.
What do I lean toward? I mean, kind of just a general jerk, really.
Yeah, that's fair. That's another approach.
Like, I'm a smart ass, but I'm also just like a jerky curmudgeon. Like, no, I don't want to do it.
You do a video podcast about statistics?
I did, yes. Those are they are now just on my YouTube channel. Those are my keynote slides synced to my lecture.
Oh, cool.
For advanced univariate statistics, which is a course that our honor students have to take.
Oh, I know that. Well, which is the one you do with your wife? Is that Future Play?
No, Broken Area.
Oh
no, Future Play was a conference I ran.
Broca's Area.
That will lead to the feed. That's the old name of the show. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting because that's what iTunes finds. I just shoved your name in to look for it.
Okay.
And it still said you might want to go into iTunes Connect because it still thinks it's Broca's Area.
I'm an old school Dave fan. I'm tangential convergence all the way.
Yeah, I wish I still own the domain. I renewed it 2 weeks ago.
It's a matter of getting. I'm still subscribed.
Well, that's nice. I'll see what I can do.
I may be the only one at this point.
I'll talk to Ken. I mean, Ken was over last night. In fact, we were saying if we still did a podcast, we could. Just pulled up my phone instead of recording.
You just email it to me.
Yeah, that's right. Let's just do it for you. Sure, we'll just call you and we'll do it that way.
His conference call. It'll just be easier for everybody.
Yeah, really. Don't have to put in any music. There's no editing.
Yep.
So did
Dave's definition of heuristic work for you, Allison?
It helped. Yeah.
Does that help? Oh, good. Okay.
Now I have to go back and read the book and see if I figure out what the heck
there's
it was talking
good,
about.
There's real good mathematical examples of this, and I can't think of any right now.
That's what I was trying to come up with. I mean, is it?
Okay. I don't know how often you would convert temperatures. Double it and add 30 turns. Celsius to Fahrenheit.
Right.
Okay.
That's a great one because it gets you close, but it's not accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's close enough for rock and roll, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, 20 and 20 is 40 and 30 is 70 and 20 is 68. So that's close enough. And of course, really, the algorithm is multiply times 9/5 and add 32.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
1.8.
Yeah, so that's
all you remember. You know, as an engineer, it's a little hard for me to do that. I'm not a scientist, but as an engineer, I need precision.
Oh, sure. And of course, you want precision in your life normally. But when you're making decisions like... And normally these things don't lead you astray, right? So like if a good heuristic about what am I going to make for dinner is I'll need a protein and a starch and a vegetable, right? That's what people in this part of the world do. That's what I do, sure. Very rarely do you think to yourself, well, instead I will maybe make breakfast for dinner kind of thing. It doesn't happen that often. But you would never use an algorithm to do that because you would try cooking everything in your house, including, you know, old computers, microphones. I'm just looking around here, cough drops. That's a case where you don't want to use an algorithm. There's very few cases where you do use them in regular cognition because you don't have to. And it would take forever. So instead, use the heuristic.
Allison, what are some rules of thumb you've used as an engineer?
There you go. Yeah, rules of thumb.
I don't have a good answer for that.
You've never used a rule of thumb? Or you just can't remember any?
Well, I'm sure there are some, but
yeah, yeah.
Nothing's jumping into my mind right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. That always happens to me.
I'm a little more like, you know, I won't say 3/8, I'll say 0.375 kind of a person. So it might be a little, it might be an obsession with precision is there that makes it harder for me to do the workarounds that
What's
are probably
faster.
What's
a photography rule of thumb?
What's that?
There you go.
Oh,
focus.
Actually, Steve just gave me a really good one. Here's one of my favorite things to talk about in structural analysis. So if you take a tuning fork and you hit it, and it vibrates, it'll vibrate at its natural frequency and it'll be a really good ring, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's an object with a very high Q. If you were to map the natural frequency or the frequency against the natural frequency, when you hit it at its natural frequency, it's a really sharp peak, right? You get a lot of amplitude. It's a nice tight peak. But if you took like a sponge, it also has a natural frequency, but it's just like this low little blob that has a very, low Q. Well, in structural analysis, they buy all these great computers and they make these structural analysis models, Nastran, Patran, you build all these 3D models and you run all this vibration analysis and everything. And the last thing the engineer does to this day is licks their thumb and goes, I think Q is 10. Now it turns out Q is almost always 10 on complex systems because they all start to average, like you've got, you know, screws and nuts and bolts, things holding each other together. It ends up being 10. But sometimes it's not. And I worked on a project where the guy that was head of the structural analysis department with a PhD in structural analysis said Q was 10 and Q tended to be, was actually 100. So then when they put this little laser up on a vibration machine, the little laser went flying across the room. So there, Q is 10.
So that's Q is 10 is a heuristic because it works most of the time,
but it's not accurate. Not all the time.
Yeah, but not all the time. Exactly. Right. And
any last words for our YouTube streaming audience?
Go Canada, go.
Woohoo. Hey.
No, you got
see you guys.
Curl.
Bye. Bye.
All right. Well, I've got Bart in 13 minutes to tell me about security bits.
Okay.
All right. I've got to go make pizza.
Oh, fantastic. Well, enjoy your pizza and your security bits.
Now I want pizza.